All right, so we ask Muslim leaders to renounce the violence in France and elsewhere, and then when they give us their statements, sometimes we don't trust them. Is that right?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Have you seen this open letter to French President Hollande by a Palestinian journalist in Ramallah? I'm going to read some of it to you. Wow, wow, wow. You got to hear this. And all these statements that are being made by Muslim leaders, Muslim organizations, we ask, okay, where are the Muslims renouncing the violence? Where are the Muslims categorically renouncing the violence? I remember I'd hear Louis Farrakhan on the air, and he'd be asked years back, I haven't heard it recently, but he'd be asked to renounce acts of terror by Islam. And he said, we renounce all acts of terror by Muslims, by Christians, by Jews. Well, that wasn't the question. And we'll often hear it with Palestinian Authority. There'll be some atrocity that's been committed by Palestinian terrorists. And they say, we renounce all acts of terror, be it by Palestinian terrorists or by Israelis. No, we didn't ask for that. If you ask me to renounce an act of violence in an abortion clinic, I will renounce it, period. If some Christian thought they were doing God's will by assaulting an abortion doctor or by killing that doctor, then I would certainly say, we renounce that. We are pro-life. We don't murder to preserve life. That is wrong. I don't have to mention what Muslims do, anybody else. But more and more Muslim leaders, organizations have made categorical statements renouncing Islamic violence. Do we simply say, thank you, or do we suspect them of being insincere, or that's just deception? 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us today on The Line of Fire. My stance is, if we are asking Muslim organizations to issue statements condemning Islamic terror, and they do so in categorical ways and say, this is not Islam, we renounce this, period. Well, my posture has to be, thank you, I appreciate that, and I take you at your word unless I have compelling evidence to the contrary. Got a great call earlier in the week from Debbie Weiss, an attorney who has investigated the Council on American Islamic Relations called CAIR, C-A-I-R, and why they should not be trusted. I had mentioned that they were suspected by those who regularly critiqued radical Islam. I have an article coming out tonight on that. So I'll deal with that head on. And what I'm basically saying is I will take you at your word unless your past track record and recent words and actions cause me to question your words. I also wrote an article about New York Times sanctioning anti-religious bigotry. You can read that by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest article. My article on Islam issues will be out tonight, so we'll post that probably about 8 o'clock tonight. That'll be on the WorldNet Daily site. In a moment, we're going to be joined by a former Muslim, Dr. Mark Christian. He wrote an open letter to America. What else has to happen so you wake up? We'll get to that. And let me just start this letter from a Palestinian journalist. Your Excellency, many Palestinians nearly fell off their chairs upon seeing their president, meaning Mahmoud Abbas, march at the front row of a rally in your capital to protest against terrorism and assaults on freedom of the media. Undoubtedly, you are aware that President Abbas is personally responsible for punishing Palestinian journalists who dare to criticize him or express their views in public. Every day we see that the Western media, including French newspapers and magazines, does not care about such violations unless they are committed by Israel. This is from a Palestinian journalist in Ramallah. All right. Mark Christian. That's right. He'll be on at 3:07. So I get to dive into these other stories first. Great. Thanks, Matt, for the correction there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We stand in faith because I call to preach the gospel, to teach the gospel, to live the gospel in the marketplace is at stake.
Ah, those words were spoken at a major rally in Atlanta yesterday, after the rally with national leaders and local leaders represented. There was a march to deliver, I think, 40,000 signatures on petitions to the mayor's office saying Fire Chief Cochran needs to be reinstated. I wrote an article last night. I mentioned the rally, and I talk about the fact that the New York Times is now openly sanctioning anti-religious bigotry and saying that you cannot hold to certain views and function as a high-level public official. Of course, if you held to other views, if you held to anti-biblical views on sexuality and morality, you could absolutely hold that position. It wouldn't matter if everybody else was uncomfortable. That's okay, because you're just a bunch of bigots, to paraphrase. I've said it over and over and over again. The fact of the matter is gay activists and their allies and the liberal media will overplay their hands. It was said yesterday by one of the speakers, you have awakened a sleeping giant. I've been saying it for a while. I've been saying I expect 2015 to be the year of pushback. The same thing, and I am not comparing liberal media, gay activists, and their allies with Islamic murderers. I am not making that comparison. I am simply making this comparison, that sometimes people are pushed before they wake up. Sometimes things have to happen that go against you before you wake up. Unfortunately, there's a lot of loss along the way. When it comes to Islamic terror, we're talking about the loss of life and limb. When it comes to loss of religious freedoms, liberties, we're talking about those things here in America. However, the good news is that people are waking up. 866-34-TRUTH. And how do we respond? We overcome hatred with love, not with more hatred. We overcome lies with truth, not with more lies. We overcome bigotry with grace and truth. We overcome name-calling not by calling people names in return, but by praying for them, by blessing those who curse us, and by continuing to propagate the truth. My newest book, which will be out somewhere around the middle of this year, will actually lay out 8 principles of living. If we live like this, we will outlast the gay revolution, and we will see the triumph of God's purposes. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. Officially from the White House, are you ready for this? The terror attacks are not radical Islam. White House spokesman Josh Earnest, we have not chosen to use that label because it doesn't seem to accurately describe what had happened. Let me review this again. We understand that hundreds of millions of Muslims are repulsed by these violent acts and reject them. We understand that. We understand it was a Muslim who helped those who were being attacked in the kosher deli and supermarket. We understand that. He helped save Jewish lives. We understand that. I believe that there are many sincere Muslims who are devout and who deplore this and who do not believe it is a fundamental core of their religion. I understand all that. But here, let's work these things out. The Iranian Revolution, the overthrowing of the Shah of Iran, now in the late 1970s. How did that happen? Ayatollah Khomeini had been banished by the Shah. He was in France. While in France, he recorded messages on cassette tapes. These were then smuggled into Iran and given to the mullahs, to the Muslim leaders. They then took his messages, put it in their words or quoted him, and preached those messages in their mosques on Fridays, which is when Muslims gather together for those services. As a result, those messages spread through the nation, and the Shah had to flee for his life before Khomeini even arrived back in the country. You want to see what it actually looked like. It's an extraordinary video. It'll also embarrass you when you see the commitment of the Muslims versus the commitment of Christians. You can still order this DVD online. God Fights Back is what it's called. God Fights Back. It's about the rise of religious fundamentalism worldwide beginning in the late 1970s. This was an Islamic revolution. Khomeini was a respected Islamic leader and scholar. This was something that was fueled in the fires of the mosques, okay? And from there, this form of radical Islam has spread to many other nations. And it is a revival of medieval Islamic theology in many ways. If you look at the rise of groups like Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, they trace back to Haj Amin al-Husseini. This is in the 1930s, going back to what was then Palestine. And this was fueled by Quranic rhetoric and by Islamic rhetoric against the Jews. These are Islamic groups. We're not talking about someone who is nominal. We're talking about people who are very devout, who outwardly affirm Quranic morality and the morality, as they see it, of Sharia law. A country like Saudi Arabia, that is an Islamic country to the hilt, and that's where most of the 9/11 terrorists came from. What's the point? It is radical Islam. It cannot simply be written off as extremism using the name of Islam, or as terrorism masquerading as Islam. It is radical Islam. And if we don't recognize it, we will not combat it properly, will we? 866-34-TRUTH. Please, if you're a Muslim, if you're a Muslim teacher or leader, please, by all means, call and speak up and tell me why I am wrong and tell me why it is impossible to be a Muslim and to hold to these things. And it is impossible to read the Quran in these ways. Please, by all means. Let me get back to this open letter to the French president by a Palestinian journalist. The author says this: Your Excellency, you are completely mistaken if you believe that Abbas and his Palestinian Authority are tolerant towards satire or any form of criticism. While he was attending the rally, a human rights group published a report accusing the Palestinian Authority of, quote, waging war against university students in the West Bank. President Abbas has managed once again to deceive you and the rest of the international community. He has now managed to create the false impression that he cares about freedom of speech and independent journalism. Palestinians like me will now pay a heavier price because Abbas has been emboldened and will now step up his assaults. France will be helping to establish another corrupt and repressive Arab dictatorship, one that glorifies and rewards terrorists no different from those who carried out the Paris attacks. I hope now Your Excellency understands why I'm too scared to reveal my identity. Friends, do you understand the conditions under which many, many journalists operate in the Muslim world? Do you understand the threats they are under? Do you understand how difficult it is for them to speak out in Pakistan and other countries? I spent time during a lengthy delay last year at O'Hare Airport in Chicago. I spent time talking with a Pakistani scholar. He is a university professor. He is a recognized expert on Islam. He shared my views as we discussed issues. He himself is a Muslim and believes there is a whole other expression of Muslim, which is of Islam, which is nonviolent, and it is a legitimate reading of the earliest texts. He believes that, but he agrees with my perspective on Israel. He agreed with my perspective on Islamic terror. His wife wrote a book about the plight of Christians in Pakistan. Because of that, she had to leave the country. We have talked, friends of mine have talked with Palestinian believers who say, of course, what you're saying is true about Islam, but we cannot say it publicly. And yet, Prime Minister Abbas is marching to declare his solidarity for freedom, his solidarity for freedom of speech, his solidarity for freedom of speech as against Islamic terrorism? Wow. All right, let's talk about statements that have been made. Do we trust them or not? 866-34-TRUTH. If you feel I'm being too militant on this, please weigh in. Love to hear your perspective.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, here's another issue as we discuss radical Islam. 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, tomorrow, normally Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but I'm going to have in studio with me my friend Frank Turek. He has written a brand new book called Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. Ravi Zacharias recommends it, David Limbaugh, a bunch of others. I've recommended it as well. So we're going to have a great, enjoyable interview. But if you are an atheist, if you have friends who are atheists, if you have real struggles with the faith, by all means, give us a call. Frank would love to hear from you and dialogue with you tomorrow on the Line of Fire. All right, here's a predicament I want to talk about. And then we'll continue to look at statements that have been made by Muslim leaders. Can we take them seriously or not? Again, my posture on that is, if we ask them to make a statement renouncing violence, and they do it, and the wording is good, and they're categorical, and they're not leaving wiggle room, then I think we have to say thank you for making that statement. We appreciate that. Let's stand together against the violence. Unless they have a clear track record that makes us question their reliability, that makes us question whether we can take them seriously or not. All right, so here's a big, big, big predicament. We love Muslims and want to see them saved. Jesus loves Muslims and shed his blood for them. Jesus shed the same blood for a Muslim terrorist as he shed for a kid raised in a Christian home. Jesus shed the same blood for Jew and for Arab. So, we want to reach Muslims with the gospel. And if our primary focus is evangelism and missions, that's our primary focus, then the less we get into these other issues, issues of Islamic terror, issues of Islamic attacks on Israel and things like that, the less we get into those things, the more effective we can be in evangelism. The more we get into those things, the less effective we'll be in evangelism, right? Same way with me when it comes to homosexual issues. The more I talk about the social issues, the more I talk about the attack on our freedoms of religion and speech and conscience, the more difficult it is for me to reach someone who only knows me on a certain level because they're going to think I hate them, I reject them, I'm bigoted, I'm biased, I believe lies about them. And obviously, unless that person is really reasonable and open and willing to hear the whole story, they'll immediately put me in the homophobe bigot category. So it's only by building a relationship, by interacting, that you can overcome that. But otherwise, people are going to get inflamed. I understand why. Of course I understand why. Well, here is a major issue that we have. We want to reach everyone with the gospel. We understand that the vast number of people that we're trying to reach are not terrorists. Again, my friend Dr. James White has debated Muslims 70, 80 times. He does not travel with an entourage of bodyguards and secret service people who are watching him to make sure he doesn't get attacked or killed. He disagrees publicly in the mosque. They have these discussions and debates, and yet, no one's laid a hand on him or tried to kill him. He's had civil discussion with many, and these are passionate issues. So we understand that the great majority of people that we want to reach with the gospel, that these Muslims, are not terrorists. And if we had a way to reach terrorists, we would. In other words, if we knew someone was a terrorist, we're praying for them. And if we had any kind of relationship with them to get the gospel to them, we would. Believe that even terrorists can be saved. But at the same time, we cannot turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to the acts of terrorism that do take place. Just as we cannot, and again, I'm not comparing Islamic terrorism to gay activism, okay? I need to say that every time because people can get carried away with rhetoric and it's dangerous and it's destructive. But we cannot turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to the very real threats to our freedom of religion, speech, and conscience here in America at the hands of gay allies and their gay activists and their allies. The question is, how can we do both? So my philosophy with gay activism, reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. When it comes to Islam, again, not comparing the two. When it comes to Islamic terror, we need to renounce it. We need to expose it. We need to call it what it is, radical Islam. We need to do that. At the same time, we need not to demonize your average Muslim. We need to do the opposite. We need to recognize, especially if this person is in religious garb, that they're probably very sincere. And in their way, they are God-fearing, and morality matters to them. And we'll probably find more in common with many of their values than the typical American worldly values. So we need to get past the outward demonizing and caricaturing. Get to know people as people and seek to reach them with the good news. May I read a passage of scripture to you? Let's see. Oh, let's go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul talks about outreach. And I'm reading from the beautiful, high quality Tree of Life version of the Bible, but this is the Messianic Jewish Family Bible. Really one of the more beautifully produced Bibles I've ever had. And hot off the press was sent to me in advance, and then we're making it available through the ministry this week. 1 Corinthians 9, Paul says this, "For if I proclaim the good news, I have no reason to boast, for pressure is put on me, and woe to me if I don't proclaim the good news. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I've been entrusted with a commission. What then is my reward? That when I preach, I may present the good news free of charge, not making use of my right in the good news. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all so that I might win over more of them. To the Jewish people, I identified as a Jew so that I might win over the Jewish people. To those under Torah, I became like one under Torah, though not myself being under Torah, so that I might win over those under Torah. To those outside Torah, like one outside Torah, though not being outside God's Torah, but Messiah's Torah, in Messiah's Torah, that I may win over those outside Torah." And it goes on. So you see it has the Jewish distinctives in translation, and yet at the same time reads smoothly. There are ministries that are offering this for a love gift of more than $100. I believe it sells for $69.95. Again, it's a beautifully produced Bible. You understand when you get it. We're offering it for $60, and we're paying the postage, and we've got a shipment imminent to arrive that's going to supplement the one that is on my desk so we can send them to you. So take advantage of this for a friend, birthday present, gift for a family member, for your own family. You'll cherish it for many years, and it's got beautiful artwork within as well. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. If it's easier to go online, then just go online, and then you can also watch a video where I talk about the Bible. That's AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, or call 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Again, we want to reach out to all people with compassion. We want to believe the best. I'll say it once more. We cannot say to Muslim leaders, why aren't you renouncing terror? And then they renounce terror. And then we say, well, we don't trust you. Unless they have proven by actions and words that they cannot be trusted. Unless they have a track record of saying one thing in English and another thing in Arabic, then it has to be scrutinized more. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Greg in Passburn, Virginia. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I just have, I don't really believe the Muslims. And you might know better than this. They say that, for example, they're prohibited to drink wine or eat, but if any occasion their life is in danger, or as long as they do it for a good purpose, they believe that they're forgiven by Allah. So when it comes to killing people, I think this is something that they know, that maybe they teach, but when they're asked if they are terrorists or they do such actions, they'll say no, no. They'll probably deny and say they love people, they're Muslims, and they're not like this. So I think when they say that, they're lying, because they believe that they're doing it for a good reason to lie.
Yeah, well, let me respond candidly to you. On the one hand, there is a doctrine, taqiyya, which is deception, which was practiced by Muhammad, and which basically says, let's say that you and I are at war, okay? You're a non-Muslim, okay. I'm a Muslim. Our nations are at war. And I realize I can't defeat you now, that I can actually make a peace treaty with you by Muslim thought. I can make a peace treaty with you with the goal of breaking that treaty within a certain number of years when I'm strong enough to, and that's perfectly fine. So there is a legitimizing of deception on the one hand. On the other hand, there are hundreds of millions of Muslims who do not believe that you can go and kill innocent people. They would say, let's say that their nation was invaded. Again, let's say I'm a Muslim nation, you're a non-Muslim nation, and you attack us. Then by all means, when we fight back, it's a holy war for us. It's not just national self-defense. It is a holy war against you, and we can engage in it. And if we kill your people, we're not just winning the war, we're doing Allah's work. But there are many Muslims, and there's no question, Greg, that they sincerely believe that it is wrong for them to go and murder a journalist or murder someone else because this person is not a Muslim or because they express contrary views. And that, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going with every time something happens, they're always out there saying, we're not like this, but their actions show something else. And I'm wondering, well, maybe this is something that they are taught, but they are not going to say it out loud, that, you know, they're going to go ahead and lie, are taught. Like anything.
No, that's the same thing, though, Greg. Some are taught this. In other words, Islamic State and these other groups, this is what they teach. Al-Qaeda is taking credit for the massacre in Paris. In other words, they're boasting about this. Different Islamic groups are lining up to boast about it because it is their theology and it is their belief to kill the unbeliever. But there are many others that have a different theology. Hey, look at it like this, Greg. There are TV preachers that have millions of people watching them, and you watch it and say, man, I don't believe in that for one minute. I don't agree with that whatsoever, because there are different streams within Christianity. And there are Roman Catholics, and there are Greek Orthodox, and there are Protestant, and there are different streams within Protestantism. The same with Islam. We don't want to paint with such a broad brush. However, there are those who do lie, and it is part of their religious faith, sad to say.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so here's an open letter. Mark Christian will be my guest in the second hour. Former Muslim, raised in Cairo, Egypt. He is the president and executive director of the Global Faith Institute. He's a son and nephew of high-ranking leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. So he writes an open letter, and he's asking America, what else has to happen to wake you up? There are even parts of England where the police don't go because it's basically run by Islamic authorities and they're going to enforce their Islamic law. There are parts of America where there are pushes to do that as well. Is this any different than religious Jews, say, in Kiryas Yoel in upstate New York? Is it any different than their group? They live in their own town, their own community. They live by themselves. They are completely ingrown. And they study rabbinic writings and raise their families in a very closed society to keep themselves separated from the rest of the world. Is it the same thing? Well, if the theologies, the ideologies, the philosophies were the same, would be the same, just like the Amish. But if there is a group that wants to undermine the society as a whole, if there is a group that wants to enforce certain laws that ultimately they want to impose on the whole society, and if in some of their places of worship they are teaching an overthrow America type of mentality, then yes, it would be different. So here's what I wrote. This article will be appearing tonight. Can we trust the council on American-Islamic relations? It is called CAIR, C-A-I-R. Well, I start by saying it's good that CAIR has renounced the Charlie Hebdo massacre in France, but can we really trust what CAIR is saying? Does their past track record match their present posture? Katie Halper put out a list of 46 examples of Muslim outrage about the Paris shooting that Fox News can't seem to find. And the first one on the list was the one from CAIR. Quote, "We strongly condemn this brutal and cowardly attack and reiterate our repudiation of any such assault on freedom of speech, even speech that mocks faiths and religious figures. The proper response to such attacks on the freedoms we hold dear is not to vilify any faith, but instead to marginalize extremists of all backgrounds who seek to stifle freedom and to create or widen societal divisions." So notice that. Notice that. They reiterate their repudiation of any such assault on freedom of speech, even speech that mocks faiths and religious figures. Quote, "We offer sincere condolences to the families and loved ones of those killed or injured in this attack. We also call for the swift apprehension of the perpetrators, who should be punished to the full extent of the law." Now, the statement was made before four Jews were killed in the kosher deli. It's highly unlikely that CAIR and other Islamic organizations would have issued such a statement if it had only been Jews killed who had been targeted for being Jews. On the other hand, the statement did come out promptly. You can't fault them for it coming out before there was another attack. Obviously, it's commendable it came out so quickly. And we don't want to say, make your statement, they make it, and they go, well, we don't believe you. That's being disingenuous. That's making it almost impossible. Okay, make a statement. We made the statement. Well, it's a good statement, but we don't believe it. Well, that's just not fair. That's not right. However, if we have strong reason to question that statement, then it is right to do so. So here's why we have some good reason to be skeptical. November 22nd, 2010, it was reported that the Council on American-Islamic Relations has been connected to the terrorist organization Hamas. This was the ruling of a federal judge in July 2009, but the ruling remained unsealed until late 2010. This is what U.S. District Court Judge Jorge Solis, or George Solis, said in the July 1st, 2009 reading. Quote, "The government has produced ample evidence to establish the associations of CARE, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, and NAIT, the North American Islamic Trust, with NAIT, the Islamic Association for Palestine, and with Hamas. Search online for CAIR, CARE, and Hamas, and start to look into the many articles that are there." Pamela Geller, not surprisingly, has been all over this with an aggressive ad campaign, of course, that has been very controversial, but as far as I can tell, is nailing the connection between CARE and Hamas. All right, so that makes me a little suspicious of the statement. That makes me question things a little bit. Now, please. I want to give the benefit of the doubt wherever I can. Nancy and I were reminiscing about this the other day. But when our daughters were little, for a birthday present, it was right before Christmas, our younger daughter was born December 23rd. So Megan was a little girl, and for her birthday present, we had made, really Nancy and a friend, I didn't know how to do this really, made this elaborate little dollhouse, but I mean, it had shingles on the roof that were put on. It was really well done. And we had it hiding in our closet. And either Megan was turning 2 or 3, but we were all in the living room in the house, and she just disappeared for a little while and then seemed to come out of our bedroom. Her bedroom was in the same hallway, and came down and said to everybody, I wasn't looking at the house, the dollhouse in the or the toy house in your closet. So I said, well, maybe she's telling the truth. Maybe she knew it was there, and she was telling us that she wasn't looking because we would think she wasn't. And everybody looked at me like, are you crazy? But if I give the benefit of the doubt, I will, especially to somebody I know or family member. Yeah, I can be naive sometimes. But when I realize there is a reason to not give the benefit of the doubt, I want to be wise, right? Wise as snakes, harmless as doves, Jesus said. So got a call yesterday or day before, again, raising concerns about CARE. And I've incorporated that, some of that, into my article, having looked into the links more, researched more. But how about this? August 22nd. That's just a few months ago, August 22nd, 2014, Breitbart.com posted tweets from Nihad Awad, the head of CARE, stating that Israel is, quote, the biggest threat to world peace and security. Not ISIS, not North Korea, not Putin, not other terrorist groups. No, Israel. This is the head of CARE. Quote, it targets civilians, 2, has weapons of mass destruction, 3, doesn't respect international laws or values. So as Breitbart said, Vladimir Putin's Russian forces remain poised for a possible takeover of neighboring Ukraine. Nuclear-armed North Korea is ruled by an unstable, nihilistic dictator who constantly makes new threats against American allies and the United States itself, along with some of its filmmakers. The Islamic State terrorist group slaughters as many people who cross its path and poses a credible threat of genocide against the ancient Yazidi people in Iraq. Yet, according to Awad, those threats to global peace pale in comparison with the real threat to world peace and security, Israel. So, we got 2 big strikes so far. CARE has been tied to Hamas, a Jew-killing terrorist organization. And the leader of CARE believes Israel is a greater threat to world peace and security than ISIS and others. Then, check this out. While speaking up for free speech, CARE has a terrible track record of backing free speech. So attorney Deborah Weiss, primary writer and researcher of Council on American Islamic Relations, its use of lawfare and intimidation, said this: CARE appears to have three main goals. One is to silence all criticism of anything related to Islam, including Islamic terrorism. Second, it seeks to Islamize the workplace. And third, it works actively to hamper American national security. And she gives some examples of that. I cite one of them in detail in my article, which will be out tonight, and then point out that just this week, Monday, so after last week's statement, that JihadWatch.com reported that CARE sent this out in an updated mailing of American Muslim news briefs, that they had asked Fox News to drop, quote, Islamophobes. In other words, the people that come on and speak against radical Islam, CARE says dropped. Oh, so CARE is fighting for his free speech while doing that? That's why I am more than just a little bit skeptical. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Despite what the media said, particularly even New York Times, they don't have you to believe the legal standard in America cannot punish what you think and what you believe.
All right. Again, one of the speakers at the rally for the fired fire chief, Kelvin Cochran, the New York Times supporting the firing, saying as a public servant, high-level public servant, he needs to be held to a different standard. Different standard than what? Different standard than whom? Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire. I want to switch back to that subject. Again, you can read my article on the New York Times sanctions anti-religious bigotry by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest article. Then tonight, my article on can we trust the Council of American Islamic Relations. That article will be up also, and we'll post that probably about 8 o'clock. You'll see the link on our website. Now, let me sort this out. The New York Times affirms that Cochran was fired not for his religious beliefs, but for his lack of judgment. This is, they're agreeing with what Mayor Kasim Reed said. So supposedly, he failed to get clearance to publish his book from the ethics committee or whatever authorities he needed to get clearance from. He spoke about the suspension when he wasn't supposed to, when he got suspended for 30 days, because in the 160-page book, which he self-published for use in his church Bible studies, there are a couple of lines that reference homosexual practice in clear negative terms in keeping with scriptural descriptions. So he then distributed the book to some of the workplace. Well, he denies any wrongdoing. He was a 30-year employee, a 7 years fire chief. And also, note this, he says he did get approval, verbal approval, from the ethics committee. When they were asked, someone said, well, no, he said, we told them that he'd have to get approval from the mayor himself. Again, that's a strange way of doing things, thinking that if you're going to publish a book, a religious subject for your church, that you'd get approval from the mayor. But maybe it operates like that. So right now it's he said, she said. But here's what we do know. There was an internal investigation done to see, he's got 1,000 employees as the fire chief. There was an internal investigation done to see whether or not he had actually discriminated against anyone. And the New York Times said, in fact, the investigation found no evidence that he had mistreated gays or lesbians. Times says, well, that doesn't matter because he could have. He might one day. Check this out. Officials for Mayor Reed, quote, found no evidence. This is from another report about the report itself. Found no evidence that Cochran treated lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender employees unfairly during his tenure. The report also reveals that Cochran once supported disciplining firefighters who openly supported Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy's public statement opposing same-sex marriage. So here, there is apparently conservative Christians or just others who agreed with Chick-fil-A when their CEO, Dan Cathy, spoke biblically about same-sex so-called marriage. All right? So these would be people that he would agree with, but because he didn't feel their public support of that was conducive to the workplace, he supported disciplining them. You're talking about someone who's even-handed, fair-minded, and did not discriminate. Well, if the New York Times just said, well, fine, but he used lack of judgment in publishing the book, and he should have. He can believe what he believes, but since he didn't have the mayor's appeal, that's the whole thing. But that's not what the New York Times is saying. That is not what the Times is saying. Quote, imagine that Mr. Cochran, who was black, were an adherent of a religion that avowed the inferiority of white people, and that he distributed literature to that effect. He would not have lasted another day in a job that requires him to manage and protect the well-being of a large and diverse workforce. But the analogy is bogus. First, it is absolutely wrong to say gay is the new black. That is as wrong as it is overused. That's first thing. Secondly, he did not avow the inferiority of homosexuals. And thirdly, he only distributed his book to a small circle of like-minded colleagues. He was not proselytizing with the book. And he did manage and protect the well-being of a large and diverse workforce to the point that he considered disciplining employees whose beliefs he agreed with but whose actions he didn't condone. You say, yeah, the New York Times says, as a high-level public servant, this makes his remarks especially problematic and requires that he be held to a different standard. Yeah, in other words, let's say that he was an openly, flamingly homosexual man and was the fire chief. And that made some of the Christians there, even some of the guys that he might wink at or flirt with, made them uncomfortable. Is that a problem? Well, no, he has the right to be who he is. You can't discriminate based on gender, based on gender identity, based on sexual orientation. What if he also was a church-going guy, but went to a gay church, and he put out a book about, you know, gay love is God's love or something like that, and had the approval of the mayor to do it? That would certainly make a lot of Christians uncomfortable. But is that a problem? No, because you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation. But yeah, but you can't discriminate based on religion. See, that's what the New York Times is doing. They are supporting discrimination based on religion. They spell it out plainly. They say the anti-religious discrimination bills that Georgia and other states are trying to pass, quote, do little more than provide legal cover for anti-gay discrimination, meaning that those who believe that marriage is the union of a man and woman or that homosexual practice is sinful should not have protection under law since they are guilty of anti-gay discrimination. And they end the article by saying, I'm confident to the core of my being that this anti-Christian bigotry will backfire. And so, as ugly as it is, I'm glad to see it get more open and brazen. And that was really the spirit of the rally yesterday in Atlanta. By the way, I get into this in depth in A Queer Thing Happened to America, my chapter, Big Brother is Watching, and He Really Is Gay. And in my new book that's going to address some of these issues and how we're to respond to them due out in the middle of the year, I address these at length as well. Okay, take advantage of, every time I get to this, I pick the Bible up and I love to rub my hand over the front with the engraved Tree of Life and over the back with the engraved Hebrew text from an ancient Hebrew prayer. I'm talking about the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, Tree of Life version. Get your copy today. Here's how. Go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Look at what's written there right on the homepage, all the description of the Bible, all the special beautiful features. Then click on the video. I'll talk to you about it for about a minute and a half, and then you can decide if this is something to get. And I think once you watch, you'll want to get it for your family. My bottom line today, when it comes to believing Islamic leaders, we want to do our best to give them the benefit of the doubt unless we have good reason to be skeptical. All right, so we ask Muslim leaders to renounce the violence in France and elsewhere, and then when they give us their statements, sometimes we don't trust them. Is that right?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Have you ever been conned? Have you ever had it happen to you that somebody tricked you, somebody deceived you, maybe someone you were married to, maybe a child that was on drugs, maybe a business partner that was dishonest? Have you ever had that happen to you? You got conned. And then you came to your senses and said, that's never going to happen to me again. This is never going to happen to me again. And then somehow they convinced you that all was well. They convinced you that they were changed. You gave them the benefit of the doubt. You got conned again. Is that what's happening with us in Islam? Okay, now we see. Now we know. Now it's clear. Now there's no doubt. But then we say, okay, that was an aberration. That was just an extreme. We can't expect that. It's an important question to ask right now. France is dealing with these issues, seeking a crackdown in many ways. Are they cracking down comprehensively enough? Are they fighting this where it needs to be fought? You don't want to demonize, mistrust millions of people. You want to be wise. 866-34-TRUTH. In a little while, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Mark Christian. We had him on the air once before. He was born and raised in an upscale Cairo suburb known as Heliopolis. His father was a lieutenant general in the Egyptian military and the personal family physician of then-president of Egypt, Anwar Sadat. For a very young age, Mark was the constant companion of his father growing up to become his closest confidant as well. So Mark became a physician. His father was a well-known religious leader and imam, but as a devout Muslim who learned Islamic theology, he ended up coming to faith to believe in Jesus. He had people close to the family who were part of the Muslim Brotherhood. He understands Islam from the inside out. And he's written in an open letter. It's posted on jihadwatch.com. An open letter to America. What else has to happen so you wake up? Mark will be joining us in a few minutes. And we'll get into these questions, and I will ask him some honest questions as best as I can. And if you are a Muslim and you differ, you have another issue with what he's saying, or you question it, or you've done research, by all means, give us a call, because he will gladly take your questions. 866-34-TRUTH. Later in the show, I want to talk to you about what happened at the rally in Atlanta. The rally standing together with the dismissed fire chief, Kelvin Cochran. Tens of thousands of signatures delivered to Mayor Kasim Reed demanding that he be reinstated. The biggest thing about that is not even his reinstatement. Of course, it would be great for him to be reinstated if he wants that, if he desires his job back. But the awakening of people to the real threats to the gospel that exist in our society today. We'll be talking about that later in the broadcast. And tomorrow, instead of our normal Thoroughly Jewish Thursday show, my dear friend and fellow apologist, Dr. Frank Turek, will be joining us to talk about his new book, Stealing from God, How the Atheists Need God to Make Their Arguments. We're going to have a great show. If you're an atheist, or if you find atheistic arguments to be very strong, if you're confused by them, by all means, this is a great day to call in tomorrow. But in a few minutes, we go to Dr. Mark Christian, President and Executive Director of the Global Faith Institute. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, last segment, I took a couple of minutes to give you the background to our guest, Dr. Mark Christian, who's previously joined us on The Line of Fire. Raised in Egypt in a devout Islamic home, he is now a devout follower of Jesus. He had family members, those close to the family, who were high-ranking members or leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. He understands not just Islam, but he also understands groups like the Muslim Brotherhood. And he's written an open letter to America and others who believe in peaceful Islam. What else has to happen so you wake up? Dr. Christian, thanks so much for joining us on the broadcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you, sir. You head up the Global Faith Institute. First, tell our listeners about that so that they know the larger work you're doing, and then we'll focus in specifically on radical Islam.
Global Faith Institute is an organization over here in Omaha, Nebraska, in the heartland, and we are dedicated to the message of Jesus Christ to raise the lost, especially the Muslims, because we believe in our heart, and as I grew up in Muslim countries and in the Muslim communities and Muslim homes, that Muslims are the first victims of Islam. And also we believe that the hope for nations is only through Jesus Christ. But we realize the dangers that we are facing as a nation, as a state, as a country, as a community, as a globe, with the threat of Islam. So we are raising awareness about that, using my expertise and my background to tell people about and educate them about the Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic religion, what it really says, what Muhammad, the prophet of Islam or the founder of Islam, did and acted like, and how we can be more effective in reaching out to the Muslim with the love of Christ, also to defend our churches, synagogues, and our country from the threat of Islam.
All right, and that's a wonderful vision and a wonderful work that you are doing. It was announced today that the U.S. government will not use the term radical Islam. We know that the Prime Minister of France has said that we're at war with radical Islam. The President of France has not used that language. Our government won't use this language. Rather, we speak of extremists who are using Islam or mass murderers who are corrupting Islam. Do you agree with the position of our State Department and our leadership?
I do not agree with it whatsoever, because it's setting the nation and setting the whole, countries to fail in their fight against the terrorism and Islamic jihadists. Because when you are removing the force that is united all those forces together, and the reason for all the fight that is going on, then you are setting us for failure.
All right. And of course, I'm very much with you on that. Why is it that someone could actually think that they are doing God's service by slaughtering journalists in cold blood because they, quote, offended the prophet of Islam? How could someone actually think like that, or by murdering Jewish children in cold blood, that they are somehow pleasing God? What makes someone think in that way?
This is exactly goes to back to the same question. They don't have to think that way. They have to follow their own religion. They have to follow their own example, the founder of the religion, Muhammad, the one who founded Islam back in 600. If I give you an example of the Prophet Muhammad, and he did the exact same thing, you understand. In the year of 624, after one of the fights or the battles that Muhammad was involved in, one of his, fights, and, they call it jihad and so forth. And I'm not going to go into the fight itself, but right after that, he had some kind of prisoner of war captured from that fight. And when he went back to his hometown, or his new Islamic state, he slaughtered the prisoners of war for no reason whatsoever, because other than he didn't find any reason for keeping them at that time. So there is a three poets. One of them a Jewish poet, and the other guy who, lived in his city, who was not a Muslim, and a lady. The three poets all together start writing poetry, and this was like the common thing in the Arabian Peninsula at that time. They used poetry
to communicate and talk to each other and stuff like that. So they start writing poetry to ridicule Muhammad and his actions and calling him a false prophet and acting in a way that does not represent the Arab values of respecting the imprisoned and so forth. And they started ridiculing him big time. Muhammad got mad and angry, and he said, who is going to kill those three people for me? And people start going and killing them, and he praised them. So Muhammad himself did the exact same thing. At that time, didn't have cartoon, so we don't have the exact example, but Muhammad killed people just for a free speech. So why those people are doing it? Because they're following the example of their founder. When we do something to replicate Jesus Christ, we are praised. But, nobody says, do things like the founder of Islam.
All right, so you're talking about people who have families, who have kids, who have relationships, and yet they are so committed that they believe that they are doing God's will. Does a religious Muslim have assurance of salvation, assurance of forgiveness, assurance of paradise? Let's say they uphold all the five pillars of Islam. Let's say that they're as devoted as they know how to be devoted, but they haven't killed anyone. They haven't died in jihad. Do they have assurance of paradise as a Muslim?
No, they do not. And as a matter of fact, again, I will go back to the example of Muhammad. I was an acting imam when I was 12 years old, so I'm going to go back to the theology and the foundation of Islam all the time because, this is what people think and act and live in the Middle East or any Muslim nation. The prophet of Islam, Muhammad, said in a very infamous thing, that nobody is going to go to heaven by his actions and by his rituals. And what he meant is that when you do whatever you can as a Muslim, following every step of Islamic teachings and rituals, you're not going to go to heaven. So his followers asked him, even you, Prophet Muhammad, and he said, even me. And then there is another example as well with the first Khalifa, the first successor of Muhammad. He said that I cannot guarantee God's actions. Even if one step is in heaven and the other one is not, I still cannot guarantee that God will put me in heaven because there is no action will get us in heaven. And there is another follower again, one of the successors of Muhammad, saying the exact same thing. So the teachings of Islam tells people that they do the rituals because it's an obligation, not a way to heaven. And there is no guarantee to heaven whatsoever, and this is what the founder of Islam said.
All right, so if you die in the Quranic terms, in Sabilillahi, in the path of Allah, meaning in jihad, then you guaranteed eternal life?
This is the only guarantee. In another saying of Muhammad, he actually mentioned 10 people around him, by name, and said those guys are going to go to heaven because God told him so. And there is another 3 women that he mentioned that are going to go to heaven. And by the way, those 3 heaven, none of the 3 people, 3 women, none of them were ever Muslims. And then he said the only way for a person to go to heaven, like from the general population and from general followers of Islam till the end of times, the only way you guarantee your way to heaven is by dying for the cause of Islam. As a matter of fact, Islam, in the Quran, the book of Islam, teaches that a lot in many, many verses. What is the path for the martyr? What is the path for the person who dies in the cause of Islam while waging jihad? And there is a kind of a completely different set of rituals that when a person dies, how he should be buried, how she should be cleaned up, and other things. Because dying in the cause of Islam is a completely different category for any Muslim to go through, and they directly go to heaven right away.
All right, so friends, I just want all of my listeners to think for a moment of not knowing if you make it in or not. I've talked to devout Muslims and asked if they're sure, and they said, I don't know, 50-50. Think of living like that, but then think if you were to die in the cause of Allah, and obviously these terrorists would think that they just died in the cause of Allah, that you are then guaranteed paradise, you're guaranteed heaven. And then with all the traditional explanations of the men having these 70 perpetual virgins that they can be with and all the feasting and everything, I actually believe this. What an incentive to murder. Dr. Christian, I know you can stay with us a few more minutes.
Can I add something very quick? As a matter of fact, the Prophet of Islam said, من منكم إلا واردة, which is an Arabic word. What it means is every person, every Muslim person actually is guaranteed to go to hell, not to heaven. Okay? So what it says over here is everyone is going to go to hell for a certain period of time to pay for his sin, and then after that will go to heaven. This is what the Prophet said. So every person, every Muslim person lives, when the 1.6, 1.4 billions, have a guarantee that they can spend some time in hell before going to heaven.
All right, the only way to bypass it then is to die in jihad. Dr. Christian, please stay with us. I appreciate your time today. I've got a bunch more questions for you. What about the leader of Egypt? Didn't Prime Minister Sisi, didn't he, or President Sisi, didn't he say we need to reform Islam? What do we make of that? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Christian, raised a devout Muslim in Egypt, follower of Jesus today, leads the Global Faith Institute. He has written an open letter to America and to others who believe there is a peaceful Islam. His question, what else has to happen so you wake up? Dr. Christian, I was quoting from an article on the air earlier in the week and again today that listed 46 major Islamic individuals, organizations that renounced the terror attacks in France. And I don't think any of them mentioned the slaughter of the Jews in the kosher deli. Maybe they did, but not the ones I saw. And I asked the question, if we ask them for a statement renouncing the violence categorically, and then they give it, is it right for us to say, well, I don't really trust you? And my response is, unless we have a good reason not to trust them. I have good reasons not to trust CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations. How do you look at this? Many Muslim leaders making categorical statements saying this is not Islam, we reject the violence. Should we trust them? What's the Christian way to respond to that?
There is people that we need to trust them, and those are the real peaceful Muslims. But unfortunately, those peaceful Muslims do not understand their own religion. So, as a matter, you know, the bottom of the line is, we are not going to depend on people to help us out in this fight whatsoever. We have to do it for on ourselves. Because the Muslims, or the peaceful Muslims, are what they need to do is not to renounce the violence, but to renounce the verses in the Quran and the actions of Muhammad that was the inspiration for all these terrorist attacks and fights that is going on for centuries right now. And America started having this kind of taste of violence starting back in 1998 and then 2000 and then 2001. This fight has been going on for years. Islam has waged war against the whole world since the inception of Islam by the Prophet Muhammad himself. So the bottom line is, until Muslims start realizing and understanding that within their theology is the inspiration for all the terrorist attacks and for all the actions of violence that's going on, and start renouncing this, then we are not going to have a problem, or we are not going to have a solution to this problem.
All right. So when you are sounding the alarm with your wake up letter to America, what else do we need to see? What should we make of communities in America, growing Islamic communities, where leadership wants to have kind of a closed community, where Sharia law is enforced? How do we respond to that? On the one hand, we want to be fair toward all our citizens. On the other hand, we don't want to be fools. What's the right response?
I think the first step and the most important step at this point in America, we need to set the example to the world. And we need to shut down the Muslim Brotherhood organization and shut down all their front groups over here. And that includes, like you said, CARE, which is Council of American Islamic Relationship, and ESNA, Islamic Society of North America, and also Muslims Association. We need to shut down every campus chapter that they have in our colleges and schools. You need to shut them completely out of this country, and they are not supposed to be functioning whatsoever. As a matter of fact, that was very close, to happen in 2009, but President
right.
Obama and Eric Holder decided that this is not going to happen, and they put all those trials that was going on to shut those organizations down on hold, and they are on hold till today. So this is the first step, to shut the Islamist civilization jihad organization in this country. And the second step is we start to understand what is inspiration into the Islam, in the Islamic theology that is causing those problems and the self or the radicalizing Muslims in this country. And that starts at the mosque. There is no problem, actually, in this country whatsoever for anybody to practice his own religion. We have no problem. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights give every individual to practice any religion they want to, whether we believe it's right or wrong, whether we agree with them or not. We do not have any saying in anybody deciding what religion they practice. But we have a big problem that if there isn't any theology or ideology that is completely against the laws and the Constitution of the United States, that those that ideology has to be stopped from being built freely over here. And it is within the Islamic theology and within the Islamic ideology that things are completely against the Constitution and the laws of the United States. That includes the Sharia law. That includes the idea of an Islamic state. That includes the violence against women and against domestic violence in general. So we need to start taking out all those teachings out of the mosques in the United States.
So then we have to monitor what's being taught in the mosques as well. Is that correct?
Do you know? No, monitoring will be against the Constitution in a way, but as a matter of fact, rehabbing all the imams and let them understand what the Constitution and the laws of the United States, let them do or not. I was at the mosque over here in Nebraska 2 days ago, and in my conversation with the imam, he told me, you know, we are talking like, you know, we are not going to be politically correct. We are honestly talking to each other in a one-on-one conversation. And in the course of our conversation, he told me three times that I am supposed to be killed. And he said it's not because of anything against you specifically, but because of you, who you are and what you did by leaving Islam. Because Allah is not a joke to play with and to become a Muslim one day or not. And I told him, it was not my choice to become a Muslim. I grew up in a Muslim family, and I was by default a Muslim. This is why I grew up like that. But when I did and make my own choices, I left Islam. And he said, this is not allowed. You are supposed to be killed. So this is a kind of thoughts and ideology that is within the Islamic mosque and Islamic situation. And do you know the fact that in every imam in the United States of America, they are not even learned to be an imam in the United States? All of them are foreign educated. They have to get their certificate to be imams, either from Saudi Arabia to be entrenched in the Wahhabis, or going to Egypt and get it from Al-Azhar University. So how come we get foreign educated, foreign licensed imams to educate in the United States without even getting any education about the Constitution and the laws of the United States and what's supposed to be done, what's supposed to be done? This is one of the areas that I have no idea why nobody addressed before. How come you have imams that is foreign educated without getting any training in the United States and Constitution of the United States?
Yeah, well, there's obviously a willful ignorance on our part at this point. You can only call it willful ignorance or a naive trust. Sir, I have one more question for you, if you could hang on another minute, but please tell our listeners what your website is if they want to find out more.
GlobalFaithInstitute.org. I really encourage people to go to our website. Again, it's GlobalFaithInstitute.org.
All right. Everybody, stay right here. I've got Dr. Christian just for a couple more minutes, and I do want to ask you specifically about President Sisi's remarks in Egypt. I can't think of a better person to ask as a former Egyptian Muslim and now committed follower of Jesus. There were some very strong remarks. What do we make of them? We'll take that up, take your calls when we come back, 866-34-TRUTH. Please take a moment, visit the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check out my latest article about the New York Times sanctioning anti-religious bigotry. And then be sure to look at our special offer this week. We've got a short video on it, the Messianic Jewish Family Bible Tree of Life version. You'll be blessed. You'll want to get it. And when you get it, you'll be elated. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire. I've got an article that'll be coming out tonight. Can we trust CARE? That's the Council of American Islamic Relations. I give reasons why I'm highly skeptical of their statement, utterly renouncing the terror attacks in France and defending free speech. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Christian. Go to his website, globalfaithinstitute.org. Find out what he's doing to reach Muslims. Find out what he's doing to combat Islamic terrorism and to educate Christians. Dr. Christian, I saw excerpts from the speech that was given by President al-Sisi to a large gathering of Muslim leaders, and he talked about the reproach that Islam was bringing worldwide. What are a billion and a half Muslims going to kill the rest of the world, the 7 billion people in the world, and what these acts of terror are doing to bring reproach to Islam. Is he just an example of a more secular Muslim speaking to religious Muslims? So first, your take on his speech, and second, you know, how it was received.
That's a very good question, actually. I know President Sisi very well. We know each other personally back when I was in Egypt, when I was a physician in Egypt. So I know him personally, and he's far from secular. As a matter of fact, he's a very devout Muslim. Mm-hmm. But when he became a president, even before that, and he lived through the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood taking control of Egypt, and he started realizing the political Islamic agenda and so forth. He's an example of a person that he wants to practice his religion to the teeth, but just want to reject parts of Islam that is political, which is a huge big portion of Islam, by the way. I'm not very optimistic about his speech. He is a very devout Muslim. He actually was addressing Al-Azhar University, which
yes.
is the most legitimate Islamic theology school in the world. And this is what I was talking and referring to in our previous segment, that every imam in the United States of America has to get the license from Al-Azhar University in Egypt before practicing over here. If you go and look in any of the imams in Egypt, in the United States, I mean, and look at their bio, they will always tell you, I went to Al-Azhar University for a course or for a year or for two or whatever. They have to get the license from there. So what he said basically is a good start. Is it really what we need to happen? We need more than that. What we need is somebody comes in and says that Prophet Muhammad, when he killed, for freedom of speech, when he killed the kafir, the non-believers, the Christians and the Jews and everybody else, he did a mistake, or we are not going to abide with those anymore. Those are things in the past. He did what he did because he was the prophet at that time, or he was the founder of the religion at that time. He has his own circumstances. Those things are not going to be done again. You know, going around the subject matter and jumping around the facts is not going to solve the problem. When CARE comes out and says we, renounce violence, it does not make any sense and not make any difference. Until people say, we know the Prophet Muhammad did so, and we are not going to do it, then we start having an honest conversation on the road of solving the problem. Because at the end of the day, we as Christians ask ourselves, what did Jesus do in this subject so we can fix the problem? And we always take Jesus as our example. Muslims do the same thing with their own prophet. And when they ask, what did Muhammad do? Did he kill the person that insulted him? Yes, he did. Then they will follow his example. You know, I don't want to make any comparison between Jesus and Muhammad. And as a matter of fact, in the article, that just was going viral, I didn't make a small example of how Jesus acted when people challenged him and how Muhammad acted. But until Muslims realize that I'm not going to follow the example of Muhammad in certain things, until Muslims realize that when I say what Muhammad did was wrong, when I ask myself, what did Muhammad do? Then I would say, no, I'm not going to follow that. Then we have a solution.
All right, Dr. Christian, there are a few folks that would like to speak with you. If you can stay on just a couple more minutes, I want to give our listeners the chance to ask you some questions. I appreciate your time and your great courage in taking the stands that you take. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, with a shout out to all of our torchbearers. You, our monthly supporters, are the backbone of this ministry, and you keep the line of fire burning bright. To find out, friends, how you can become a torchbearer, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on Donate.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the broadcast. I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Christian, raised a devout Muslim, now a follower of Jesus, born and raised in Egypt, where he was a physician. He now leads the Global Faith Institute. Go to the website, globalfaithinstitute.org. Dr. Christian, let's just grab a couple of calls, and I do appreciate you staying with us. I just have one question we'll get to after our callers, and you can think about this as well. But when President al-Sisi wants to have a devout Islam that is not political, I just wonder, based on what Islam is historically, that I don't know how you can separate politics from theology, but you can help us with that. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. You, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Hi, Dr. Christian. I wanted to make a comment about, and I totally appreciate what you're saying, Dr. Christian, as far as that he should probably renounce, let's say, what Muhammad did years ago and say, well, that's what he did then and that's not us now. But really, the problem with that, and it's the same problem that is in Christianity. It's like a Christian that says, well, I identify with Christianity, but I don't believe that the only way to the Father is through the Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. That's radical. And so really, you're not a Muslim if you don't adhere to the very foundation, which is the Word, which is the Quran for them, and any writings from Muhammad. That is the religion. And to deviate from that, I don't understand how somebody calls themselves a Muslim and a peaceful Muslim if the Quran and the books are the foundation of the religion support violence on this earth, just the same as I don't understand as a Christian who identifies with Christianity, but then says, no, as long as you're a good person, if you get to heaven. That's not
all right. So Dr. Christian, if a Muslim said, listen, you were a former Muslim, you know that you have the chapters that were warfare chapters in the Quran, and this was a certain stage of Muhammad's career in life, just like Joshua killed the Canaanites, and we don't do that today. And we have the other passages in the Quran that teach us civility and respect. So we can be true Muslims just by putting Muhammad in the right historical context. Would that be the response to the caller? Or is he right in saying that you can't repudiate the example of Muhammad without repudiating Islam entirely?
I would agree with the caller, but if you understand, you know, the mindset of Muslims and somebody who lived Islam all his life, mostly, before accepting Jesus as Lord and Savior in the last 9 years, I will tell you that there's people actually living with that mindset, that they are separating already in the mindset the Islamic, you know, teachings of violence and stuff like that, and completely living a very peaceful life. But they do not have a preacher to tell them what to do and not to do. They do not have a theology in a written book that tells them how to do and what to do. They are living in fear and their own bubble. What I am talking about is to find a coalition from all those people and give them the freedom and the right to write their own books. Did you know that every peaceful Muslim out there, and those peaceful Muslims that they talk about, the religion, that there is peaceful part of Islam, there is no one book has been written ever in the last 1,400 years of an interpretation of the Quran that talks about peaceful Islam. If they show me one book, then I will believe that they are peaceful. What I'm trying to encourage them, I'm saying that, but at the same time I'm trying to encourage them that they need to start writing a book about the peaceful Islam that they're talking about, and they start teaching their own mosque and have a mosque that will teach that stuff and so forth. So this is the importance, you know?
Got it. All right, thanks. Let's grab one more call. We'll stay in Dallas, Texas. Emmanuel, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to briefly intervene. My opinion is kind of similar to the previous caller. And what I want to say is that in reality, the word like peaceful Muslim, the expression peaceful Muslim is a term, I guess, that was coined by the Western people, not the true Muslims, because actually there's no such thing as peaceful Muslim, because peaceful Muslim actually are hypocrites, those that do not really fully believe what the Quran say. Because as far as I'm concerned, I believe that true Muslims are people like Osama bin Laden, because they really believe those things that are written, and then they have to put into practice. If a person calls himself peaceful Muslim and cannot kill in the name of a jihad, or that's a hypocrite. That's not a Muslim, you know. So and I really blame the U.S. media and the Western media in general for, you know, calling those people peaceful Muslim. There's no such thing as peaceful Muslim. If a person is a peaceful Muslim, it means that he's just a hypocrite. He just does not actually believe whatever they say in the Quran. So the fact that they try to...
All right, yeah, so Dr. Christian, just over to you. Go ahead, please.
I would agree 100% with the caller, and thank you for your opinion. I would agree 100% with this, but what we need to do is we need to ask those peaceful Muslims to have a religion for themselves, whatever they want to call it. I don't know what they want to do. As a matter of fact, in my own experience, I know the only way to heaven is Jesus Christ. I know the only way of my salvation is Jesus Christ. I would encourage them to check Jesus and see how he can change their life upside down. But if they want to stay Muslims, then they have to talk about their religion from a different perspective, and to have the courage, when they say they are peaceful Muslims, to have the courage to show me in a written book or a written interpretation of their own idea of what those verses in the Quran mean and how they are not going to abide with it. But dancing around facts and playing with the words and invent something that does not exist in the West, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
All right, what if someone said, and thank you for the call and the comments, Emmanuel, what if someone said, well, take a country like Indonesia, it's the world's biggest Islamic country, and people can live there peacefully that differ, and they can live side by side with Muslims. Isn't that a great example of moderate, peaceful Islam? What about someplace like Indonesia?
Are you kidding me? Indonesia applies Sharia law, and there is 19 people in jail right now, just since the beginning of last year, that has been prosecuted and put on a death row because of blasphemy. No, there is no one country that can give you an example of peaceful Islam. Indonesia is a Sharia law country, you know, like Saudi Arabia and Iran. Yes, you find people, you know, committing all kinds of sin in the streets of Indonesia and everywhere else, because as a matter of fact, Muslims cannot live up to the word of Islam and the ritual of Islam. Islam controls every aspect of people's life, and people are very sinners because they don't even, you know, they want to run away from God. And if you jump in the mindset of any Muslim, they will tell you, I don't want to have a relationship with God. I just want to be left alone. You know, there are many Muslims like that. I think America can lead the way by, you know, fighting the good fight, start, you know, telling Muslims, putting feet under fire under their feet, asking them to show that they are real peaceful, they can make a difference, they can set an example in the world. But there is no nation and there is no Muslim community all over the world in the last 1,400 years that can be an example or follow or can be a peaceful Muslim whatsoever.
All right. We've just got a minute and a half before our break. Thank you so much for your time. What happens to a devout Muslim when they discover who Jesus really is?
They got killed for it, like the imam told me in the mosque 2 days ago. They get killed for it. They get abandoned by their own family, and their life changed dramatically. And, you know, I'm using myself as an example. I lived through that fear and that cut off completely from everybody and everything that I know. But I tell them on a regular basis, Jesus is enough. Jesus will transfer your life and provide you like exactly what the Bible says. You're going to have better families, better friends, better future, and better life, and most importantly, you guarantee heaven.
Yeah, and to actually know that your sins are forgiven is extraordinary. Friends, would you pray for Dr. Christian? There are people who would love to see him dead. He does what he does with courage. It's not just someone from the West speaking out against Islam. You saw what happens with that. But here is a former Muslim. That's the worst thing of all. in their eyes. Let's pray from the website globalfaithinstitute.org. Dr. Christian, thanks for joining us, and thanks for your fearless voice of clarity.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are very welcome. All right, once more, Global Faith Institute, the guest, Dr. Mark Christian. You can read his open letter to America, What Else Has to Happen So You Wake Up. It's posted at jihadwatch.com, J-I-H-A-D, one word, jihadwatch.com. And by all means, look for my article tonight about Can We Trust the Council of American-Islamic Relations? And wow, some very, very strong counsel for America from Dr. Mark Christian. We come back, we're going to focus on America. I want to take you into a rally that took place yesterday in Atlanta. Tell you why this is so important. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is the embodiment of what we call freedom of conscience. That is why we're here, to speak out against a pattern of encroachment by government like the city of Atlanta and our right for freedom of conscience.
He's one of the speakers at the rally in Atlanta yesterday, standing up for the fired fire chief, Kelvin Cochran, fired by Mayor Kasim Reed. We spoke about that last week. I have an article that's gotten a lot of attention on that, shared probably about 30,000 times, different websites up to now, exposing the double talk, unfortunately, of Mr. Reed. Now the New York Times has added their voice in as well. You say, but I heard he was fired because he violated certain things. Well, Kelvin Cochran says, no, it wasn't the case at all. But the bigger issue is this. Bigger issue is this. There was never an example of him discriminating against any employee. This is the mayor's office investigated. No example of mistreating any employee, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender identified. Never discriminated against them. Okay. And more importantly, he has every right under our American Constitution to believe what he believes about these various things and to believe that certain practices, including heterosexual sex outside of wedlock and promiscuity, multiple sexual partners, that these things are all wrong and sinful in God's sight and a perversion of his ideal, along with a long list of other sexual sins that pervert God's ideal. It would be a scriptural view. He has every right to hold to that. What we're being told, though, is, well, not in that position, not as a fire chief. You see, if Mayor Reed had said, I have no problem with this book being out. I have no problem with him self-publishing it. I have no problem with him giving it to close friends that he knew agreed with it, who worked for him. However, he didn't follow proper protocol. And because of that, we had to take action. We don't fire him over that. You might have some kind of discipline. Now, he says he did go through the proper protocol. And he, in fact, he gave a copy to the mayor. You're not going to give a copy to the mayor if I stole something from you, I'm not going to give it to you to say, hey, what do you think of this? Okay, if I broke the laws, your laws in doing something, I'm not going to turn around and announce it to you. When he gave a copy to the mayor, this was assuming the mayor would like the book. So the issue is, though, that he gets fired, that he gets, before that, put on suspension for 30 days without pay? That's pretty harsh. That he gets forced to go to sensitivity training? And the New York Times says, yes, it was right that he was fired because you can't hold these beliefs and manage and oversee a diverse fire department. The good news is people are waking up. I have been sounding the alarm for years, have I not? I have said for years that the activists who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. First few years, people told me, nobody's trying to put you in the closet. Then it changed, and they began to say to me, bigots like you belong in the closet. As one of the speakers said yesterday at the rally, sleeping giant has been awakened. Let's listen to some more excerpts from the speeches. It was an echoey room where everything was being spoken, place packed out. representatives there for Franklin Graham, as well as other major ministries. Tony Perkins was there, and key local leaders, both black and white. Clip number four.
The reality is simply this. Regardless of who signs whose check, that signature is never powerful enough to stop the voice of a Christian. How do we respond now as Christians? The reality is simply this, that we can never lose perspective of how we're to respond in a culture of chaos. Our responsibility is to continue to pray for our mayor. Yeah. Our responsibility is to continue to pray for our city and those in whom God has placed in leadership.
Let's keep going. I just want you to hear a couple more clips. How about Martin Luther King's niece, Alveda King? Clip number five.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Hallelujah. Or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the rights of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. I had to read that because some of us may never have heard that. That's the First Amendment of the Constitution.
All right. Everyone listening to me in Texas right now, everyone listening to me in the DFW area on our great stations, everybody, give me your best ear for one moment. Breaking news from Texas. Texas ad company will remove, quote, ex-gay billboard. Here is a billboard, a paid ad, focused therapy, reparative therapy for transformation, authentic counseling, real therapy, really works, reparativetherapycenter.com, and there was a protest about this, telling gays that they can be changed through counseling, through authentic counseling, and the billboard is being pulled. Did you hear that? The billboard is being pulled. This is what we are up against. There can be no other opinions. There can be no other points of view. Even though many attest to being helped through counsel, no, you cannot advertise that because we can tell you about people who were hurt through it. Same with probably most counseling. For most other things, you'll have good stories and you'll have bad stories. You can't even advertise this. The bad news, friends, is the good news, as I've said for many, many months now. People are waking up. People are recognizing why I've been so burdened about these things. People are recognizing why we have been sounding the alarm. The good news is people are waking up. The bad news is it's a little bit late to be waking up. A lot of people have been hurt. A lot of rights have been infringed on. But take heart. It's wake-up time. As I said, I believe 2015 is the year of pushback. So where do we start? We start on our knees, repenting of our own sins. Where do we start? We start asking God to give us his burden of love for all those we differ with and who differ with us. Where do we start? We start with the Word of God. We get our marching orders from God. We get our marching orders from above. And we say, God, speak to me. God, give me ears to hear what your Spirit is saying and a heart to obey. And in that context, I would be guilty if I didn't mention the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, one of the most beautifully produced Bibles I've ever seen. If you want the Tree of Life version, you don't have it yet, or if you have one and you want to get a family one, this is beautifully sewn, produced, engraved. The artwork and the text and the front and back covers engraved, the artwork inside. It's just a beautiful Bible. And of course, it's the Tree of Life version, the Messianic Jewish translation produced by a team of scholars. I'm part of that team. So get your copy. Go to our website to find out how. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and watch the video on the homepage. My bottom line today, yes, things are really shaking and going in a negative direction in our country. The good news is people are finally waking up. Do you hear the alarm?